adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter. The frenzied pace of the mind inside.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the ADHD Cast, the show that started because I couldn't keep my brain in its pan. And I just decided indie comics wasn't enough. And so the ADHD Cast was born. And today I'm joined, and I've never really done that intro until today. I was like, why did I do this? Because I couldn't keep my brain in its pan. I was like, why do I want to talk about this? You heard that voice, the melodious voice, the Femon literary queen, Jess B. Davies is here. Hello, Jess.
Hello. Wow. What an outstanding introduction.
I mean, it's all true. All facts. These are facts. And so, first of all, we're recording this in March, but this is coming out in April. And this is coming out in between. We're like, soon people could go back 2 months ago and 1 month ago in the Femon feed and have heard us in two parts talk about books, and then like a few weeks ago in the Comics Motion feed and hear us talk about everything, talk about two books, Still Life and The Book Thief, on your lovely show Literature for Life, which you let me see. And every time I say literature when I talk to you, I need to say it like you say it.
Literature.
Yeah. I love it. Literature. The way that you, literature. It's so much better. We Americans are the worst. And so anyway, so I was talking to Jess and I was like, you know, Jess B. Davies is a writer. We talk about writing things and she's a reader. So I thought, you know, it'd be fun to do the ADHD Cast about writing with somebody who's a writer. And I know lots of writers, but the reason I wanted to have you on, and we could turn this into a whole series, but the reason I wanted to start this with you is because you and I were talking about like your novel when I first met you and you're working on it and you were like having thoughts. I was like, you know, it's so fun. I'm in the process of writing a series and I just thought it would be fun for us to talk process. I have some writing questions for you as one of the most renowned feminists that I know. So I have some very specific questions for you about that. But I just thought we would talk about writing. So hello, Jess B. Davies. Welcome. This is you. This is your first. You're the guest on my show. I'm not the guest on your show.
No, this feels wonderful. I didn't have to do any prep.
No,
I just hit up.
Yeah. Ada and I were talking. Ada, one of the other Femon gals, and love I, who's Ada. Also the voice of Welcome to Mansfield audiobook.
I know this. I'm the guest. I know.
No, please.
But I have been listening to the wonderful voice of Ada narrate the wonderful novel of yours. And it's just been every time I have to do, because that's when I listen to audiobooks, when I have to do a chore so that I get my chores done. I listen to Welcome to Mansfield and I am loving it. I'm loving it so much. I'm going to listen to it on my drive back to London, which is a 5-hour drive. So,
where are you?
I'm in Wales.
Oh, you are in Wales. We were talking about Wales off air. It was this almost turned into the Wales Cast.
Yeah.
Oh, you're at Wales visiting your mom.
I am. I'm in Wales. Yeah. Nice. So yes, I just wanted to add in a quick plug because I'm absolutely loving listening to your audiobook at the moment.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, Ada and I were actually talking about you the other day. It had nothing to do with either of these things, but because Ada is thinking about getting back onto Instagram.
Okay.
And I'm on there reluctantly because of the books and everything, and I'm bad at social media. And so I said, I kind of just look at, see what Jess does. I'm like, if there was anybody who understands, like you're on there and you make it seem like you know what you're doing. And it's like, we just got to be more like Jess. Like Jess is like, Jess, Instagram was invented by Jess B. Davies. She's like, this is how you're supposed to do Instagram. And I was like, I don't understand it. It's stressful. But you seem to always be having a good time. You know what you're doing. You post in a timely fashion. It doesn't look painful. A picture of your partner was on there the other day. And there was a dartboard behind his head, but there was no darts being thrown at his head. It was like lovely.
Yeah. I mean, a big, a strong theme of my Instagram posting is making fun of my partner.
He looked like he was having a fine time.
Well, yeah, I think that was the famous Garrett Bop. So you'll never catch him dancing, but you will catch him bopping his head if he's having fun.
Is that what it was?
Caught it on camera. Caught his little boppy boppy bops because we were in Dublin.
Yes, you were. Nice. Okay.
Instagram can be an absolute mind-boggling experience. You're very good at it, though.
So we were talking about you, though, because Ada and I were saying, like, Jess seems like a natural. Like, we are bad at life. And you're younger than us, but, like, you're not You're a lot younger than me, but not so much younger than Ada, but still, but it's not like you're 12 either. So it's not like you just, it seems like you invented it. I don't know if you secretly invented Instagram and you
Yes, you're
didn't
right.
tell
I
us. You
did.
sold it. You
I'm actually
invented
a
it and sold it.
billionaire.
I didn't know. Wow, amazing. Well, good on you. Good on
Thank
you.
you. Thanks
Yeah,
so
yeah.
much. Yeah.
That's good. Well, congratulations. So breaking news. I'm
Oh,
here with the founder of Instagram, but we're not going to talk about that at all. Anyway, so okay, well, cool. Well, I can't wait to hear what you think at the end. I think the first time I heard her do Junior's voice, I cried.
yeah. No, she's great at doing Junior's voice. Also, she's hilarious at doing Reverend Norris.
That's her favorite character.
Reverend Norris is an excellent character. And but I love all the contradictions. Like,
She's
obviously she's
awful.
such a pain in the ass,
Yeah.
but the subtle contradictions, like, I know people who are Reverend Norris. And I
Yeah,
was like, oh
she's
my
the
God,
worst. And obviously in Mansfield, well, not obviously, in Mansfield Park, the Norris, the sister Norris, she's married to a reverend, right? So I made my reverend, I just made her. I was like, the husband's dead. We don't need him anymore. Let's just get rid of him. Let's make her the reverend. And that, but that character was that. She would say one thing and then absolutely do the other. And
oh
she was very
God.
manipulative. And she'd be like, of course we need to bring Fanny, young Fanny here, but we also need to put her in the attic so she knows her
Yeah.
place. And you're like, what if, why do you hate love? What is wrong with you? And in the original book, you don't ever find out why Norris is how she is. And in my
Okay.
book, you find out.
Okay, I'm excited for that.
Yeah. And so, but anyway, yeah, Ada loves her and Ada would like to play her in the movie.
Oh my God, is that going to happen?
I
Is that
mean,
going to happen soon?
I mean, we don't know,
Don't
but I
make
mean,
promises you can't keep, Tony.
well, I said to Allison, I said, you direct it, Tanya can play Fran, and
Excellent.
then right, and then I asked Ada, and she wants to play Norris.
Yeah, you know what? She'd be an excellent Norris. Just
She
from the
was,
way she has narrated Norris's voice. Oh my
yeah,
God.
that's so we can, I mean, we'll put it out in the universe.
Yeah,
We know
yeah.
a director
What's
slash
happening?
producer. We know actors. I would just like to play the English teacher because number one, I am an English teacher and he doesn't have any speaking roles.
Perfect.
He just
Perfect.
does a mime thing with Junior at one point in time and that's it.
I
So
love that.
I have a few people in mind that I would like to play Junior, but that's anyway. So, well, let's start there. So we're here to talk about writing because Jess B. Davies, and I don't want to out you here on this
No,
show,
crack on.
as a has a somewhat of a crisis of confidence with her writing ability.
Yes, perfectly timed is this conversation. I actually just wrote something about this. It's not anywhere. It will be
It's not
somewhere
even going to be in the
soon.
600 word.
Well, I'll get onto that. But
Okay.
yes, you're right. I have had a writing crisis.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. So I just thought, well, the reason I want, so because I feel like you and I were talking back and forth about off air and in email, what it means to be a writer and are you a writer if you're writing? I say you are. And you're like, well, and so that's kind of where you're crazy. But I think we're all that way. Like, all
Yeah.
writers have imposter syndrome, yet we
Yeah.
have this uncontrollable urge to tell stories. Tell me about yours. Tell me what it
Yes.
is. Let's the
Well,
cow well, let's get the office is open. The doctor is in. I am not the doctor. We're just here to talk. Yeah.
yeah. Well, I recently turned 30, and I've never had. My friend said to me that I was born to be in my 30s. And when she said that, I was like, you know, that's so true because I for the fit for the fit I up until like 20 up until 24, I was like doing the 20s thing, you know, like all over the place, like la 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 la. And then I like really
That's the
settled
right
into the
sound,
like,
too. That is
right?
the right
Exactly.
sound. Absolutely.
Exactly. And then I really settled into you know, nice chilled dinner evenings with friends and reading books in quiet spaces and only going on Instagram when I feel able and suited to, and always, and like honesty became a big part of who I am, and like, you know, anyway, so being, and the 30s have always been this decade that everyone raves about because you're supposed to like kind of know who you are and give less fucks and hopefully have your shit together, which all comes together in this like wonderful decade of fun. Anyway, so like that's all great.
That's all great, she said.
That's all great. And then, so 2 years ago, I was in a really, really stressful job and I realized that I wanted to take writing a bit more seriously. I wanted to write a novel. And so I found a new job that was the same money but less responsibility and no expectation to work outside of my hours. All
Dream.
of this, exactly, all of this. So with the specific focus that I, well, with the specific purpose that I would be able to write, I would have the mental capacity to write. I wouldn't get to the weekend and just feel like I needed to sleep for 2 days and then, you know, be so stressed out that I could only think about work and nothing else. So I got a new job and I was like, right, well, this is the beginning of me writing a novel. And I'd not studied creative writing. I'd not done any writing courses. I just knew that I loved to write and I knew that I loved to tell stories. And I'm a big reader, like you said. So, and I went to the Lake District and I fell in love with this landscape. And I just started this, just these ideas started bubbling up in my head. And I had this like real urge to put them on paper without any idea as to how to tackle it. You know, no, like how to build a good character, how to build a good plot line. Obviously, for the first sort of 6 months that I was writing this novel, I was reading up about that. You know, every time I'd think about, oh, what should this character be? I would read about bits about the theory. And so over a 2 year period, it was like I would start and stop the novel. And I know now, I know. So 6 weeks after my crisis began, I know now, right, that this whole 2 year period was very, very important. But 2 weeks before my 30th birthday, I was staring at a blank Google Documents titled Chapter 19, and I just was like, I mapped out what I thought needed to happen next, and then I realized that I didn't want to write it anymore. Like I just didn't, I didn't believe in the characters, or I didn't think the story mattered to me. And it wasn't about matter that it mattered to anyone else. It was like it doesn't matter to me anymore, and like I don't see the value in it because it's not. It was no longer aligned with what I wanted to write because over the past 2 years, that had grown. When I first started writing, I was just like, I want to write a story. But
I like
now,
how you said it in like a little kid voice. I
yeah, I want to
appreciate
write
it
a story.
because you were
Yeah,
28, just so
I'm
young.
28. Yeah. But it was like, but it wasn't just about being 28, it was about being at the very, very beginning.
Sure.
Right? Which for you were a child when you started writing stories, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And I have loads of friends who were actual children when they started writing stories. So it's how I imagine people who start writing, because a lot of them are kids, right? Like I once wrote a story, and that was me. Like, but then 2 years later, I know more about who I am and the things that I care about, and therefore what I want my voice in this world to be. And this story wasn't that. And I know that you should put it all down and then you can come back and you can change it. But I had done that twice and I had spent 2 years and I was just like, oh my God, I don't believe this anymore. And that's when my crisis started.
And then you turned 30. And so birthdays are weird. It was 25 was my birthday meltdown, because I had graduated from what you guys call university. I graduated from college. I had a degree in English. I was teaching already at the college. I was a college professor by then, but I'd published things. I'd written newspaper articles. I was a freelance writer. I interviewed people. I had a ton of bylines. But it wasn't, I hadn't published a book, right? I hadn't done the thing that I thought I was going to do when I was 12. And I was 25, so it was half my life I wanted a
Yeah.
thing. And so I had a meltdown. And a serious one about stuff. And a few years before, too much information, but a few years before I had an actual mental breakdown, like while I was in college. And so I was never really over it. I was never really over that mental breakdown, but like, so all the weight of it fell on the writing. So I understand, and you're like, okay, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? The problem is, right, Jess, you can't not tell the story. Like, even if you don't want to tell that story, you didn't say, I don't want to write this book. So in your crisis, what I'm hearing in your crisis, you didn't say, I don't want to write anymore. You just said, I don't want to write this anymore. And did you conflate the two?
So, I was never worrying about. No, at no point did I question my ability to write or my writing as the thing that I want to do. It was just like, oh my God, it's taken me 2 years to get here. Oh my gosh, it's taken me 2 years to get here. So I'm technically going to start again. So I'm looking at least another 2 years. And publishing a book is notoriously difficult. And I am, what I should say is I am a very impatient person. It's like a core part of who I am. I'm not
Sure.
joking. I
Okay.
am an insanely impatient person. And my impatience kicked into overdrive
Oh.
because, and so you can understand what's starting to happen, right? There's no more joy in it.
Yeah.
I want to be, I want my, I want writing to be my job. I don't want to have to deal with any of the difficult stuff, like fitting writing around my work. I got to this place where I was like, I'm never going. And I messaged my friend who also loves to write, and I literally messaged her. I was like, I'm never going to be a writer. Even though I know that I am a writer, because it's now a big part of my identity, I am a writer. But I no longer had that roadmap. I no longer had. I felt completely lost. I felt like I was just drifting in the intergalactic nothing, and being like, Will that, what's that? Maybe I do that. No, that doesn't, maybe that, I don't know. There's an idea. I don't, it's going away now. I don't, that was my brain for like 2 weeks. And so what made it worse was, so I went to my friends, my friend Christian and Ollie, me and my partner went over for dinner, and I had a big emotional dump on them, and they're wonderful, and they listened, and they,
I believe the phrase would be took an emotional dump. I like that you said you had, but I feel like in my brain, I want you to.
I took an emotional dump on them
Right.
and they scooped it up.
Because they're excellent human beings, obviously. Yeah.
Excellent
Yeah.
human beings. And a couple of days later, my friend sent me a job posting. And it was for, the job posting was senior content writer for this like startup, 1.5 times my salary. And he said, in the interest of growth. And I went, okay, more money would make me feel better. Yes. And so I was like, I'm going to put writing on the shelf for a second because that makes me feel bad because I don't know what I'm doing and that makes me feel bad. And I'm having this whole like, because writing is so fickle. Like it, when you're writing, it's like no other feeling in the whole world. When you're getting all the ideas and the stories and the words in your head, and they are now, and you're getting them on the page, and you're in that flow. There's like, it's like nothing else in the whole world, and only writers will understand what that means. But it can be such a thankless task. Like you write, and then, but you've also got to figure out where to publish it, and you've also got to be okay with not many people reading it. And then once you get there, then, if you want to write a novel, then there are so many stages of people liking what you do and thinking other people will like it before you get to a stage where where the shrine of writers is, the published authors. It's a very long, just such a long journey. And so I was just like, writing is hard. I'm gonna apply for this job, right? So in my head, this job is like the next best thing.
Sure.
So I like spent a week applying for this job, and I was like, I'm so good at this. I could do this job in my sleep. I could do this job in my head, like up above. And in the cover letter, I think I was like, look, I love to write. Writing is a big part of who I am. I have this blog over here, and I am part of this family. I'm part of this collective. Like I was like, here's who I am. And then they said no. Like, and then I got rejected, which made the whole thing worse. So now plan A is in the bin. Plan B is in the bin. Plus, in my head, now and then, every like, maybe 3 times a day after I got rejected, just this little voice that goes, No one gives a fuck about your writing.
Oh.
Right? So like this big cauldron of shit, just like anyway. So like then I was like, just do what you tell other people to do and just sit in your feelings. Sit in your feelings. You'll figure it out. So went back to the novel. Because what I should say, lovely listener, is that I sent Tony an email like, "Hi Tony, yeah, how are you? Yeah, all good. Blah blah blah. By the way, think I'm gonna put my novel in the bin, but I have this other idea. Hope you goodbye." And Tony was like, "Oh, great. Maybe you can. Maybe why don't you just send me what you've got? Just send me
I
what you've
still am
got.
waiting.
I know." And I'll come to that. You're like, that's great. That wonderful. Yeah, you. Yes, you could just send me what you've got." I was like, like I'm on the edge, and you're just like, "It's okay, you can get down. You're absolutely fine."
Yeah.
Which I really appreciated, and it actually made me giggle when you sent me that email, because I knew exactly I would have sent the same email, right? You're like, "Good for you, yes, but also, you don't need to put it in the bin. You could just, I'll look at it. Like, it's
Yeah.
fine." So anyway, so I went back to the story and I was like, no, I definitely don't want to keep working on this. Not for now, anyway. So,
That's okay too. That's okay too. It is okay. And I don't, and I was, and I appreciate that you heard what I was saying. Like, it is true. I agreed. Everything you said, I was like, yep. All of that was true. You totally captured it. But I just wanted you to, I just wanted somebody who wasn't you to look at it. That's all. You could have sent it to Tanya or Ada or Ria, any of the femme aunt, Allison, sent it to anybody, but I was the one who was there. I got the emails. I was like,
Yeah,
you should send it to
absolutely.
me. I didn't want to say, well, you should send it to somebody. I was like, no, you should send it to me.
Which is honestly so lovely. Like, these are the people you want in your corner, right? You are the person like that people need in their corner, and I feel like it, like it's so nice to have you in my corner, because that I was like, okay, there's someone there who I like. It's so good to have those people, right?
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
So, and what it made me do was like, because I was like, well, before I send it to Tony, I just need to look at it again. But obviously, I started looking at it, I started messing with it, and that didn't feel good. And I was like, okay, I need to put this down. And I wasn't ready to send it to you, because I just they like I didn't, because it was like draft zero, and if you do start reading it, like you'll see that my writing style and my voice and stuff, it changes, which is the whole point of the first novel, right? You're like learning as you go,
Yeah.
and that's what I was doing. But then I was just like, okay, let's start again. Because I've completely lost the joy in all of this. I've lost the excitement. I no longer look forward to sitting down and thinking or actively writing.
That's not good.
No, exactly, because it's the whole reason I got so upset about this was because writing is my purpose. It's like the thing that I love doing the most, and the way that I see that I can add value to the world, like I can tell stories that may or may not add value to other people's lives. And so when it doesn't feel good, or it feels like it's in crisis mode, it's like I really felt like the ground was shaking. Like I was just like blowing around in the wind. Like I just didn't, I had no rudder. Like I was rudderless. So I was like, okay, just calm down. Why don't we start? And I mean, as a creative person, you'll know yourself. Like, you could be going about your day, and then you can have an idea that just like smacks you in the face. And you're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I've got to write this down. Write it down right now. Because if you don't, you'll forget it. Well, that happened to me one night. I think I was falling asleep, or I just had a dream. I don't know. But I had this idea. And so I worked on it for a couple of days. I just like was sitting in bed, like just writing down ideas, like, oh, like, and it's literally like, I had a little seed of an idea, and I was just like just adding bits to it and letting it grow, and it felt really good. That process felt good. I was like, just the whole process of being creative again felt good. So I let that idea like bubble up, bubble up, bubble up. And then I put that to one side. I went to Dublin with my partner for my 30th birthday. Came back. And then I let that bubble, bubble, bubble. And then for some reason, I decided to go back to the first novel, which, and the first novel, the reason why I believed in it for a long time was because I wanted it to be. I'm very interested in the history of mining in the UK, and that's a big, and a big part of that is because I'm Welsh.
Which we
I
talked
grew
about
up in,
off air. Yes,
yes,
for
we
sure.
did. Grew up in Wales, and it's a big part of the Welsh national identity is our coal mining history. Very working class, very like, very like you just got to get it done, like, So I'm very interested in that. And what I realized was my story just it didn't have anywhere near as much of that. So I was like, what parts of the first novel that I have put to one side can I pull out? I was basically like, how can I start this again? Like, what parts of this story do I still love? Do I still believe in? Do I still want to tell? And I was like, well, that the mining stuff. I wanted my character to be exploring his sexuality. And then so yeah, so I was pulling out bits of the story that I didn't want to lose or still wanted to like explore further or hang on to or And then I used that and I just kind of went back to the beginning. My friend told me about the snowflake method. And so I started using that and I was like, okay, look. And I was kind of I was treating myself I was treating myself with a lot of very delicately. I was like, okay, Jess, we're just gonna do one thing today. And that thing is just going to do this one little thing, right? You don't have to do a lot. This is not a pressure thing, right? You're not feeling well, it's fine, just one thing. And then I'd do that and then I'd get into it and the next thing it's 10 p.m. and I have to go to bed. I'm like, okay, well that felt good. Literally one step at a time and like only focusing on doing the thing that I enjoy doing, not on, oh my gosh, I'm not a published author, when will it happen? I was trying to take all the pressure off and just do the thing I like to do. And it turned into a story that I now really want to write. So I've pulled out characters, elements of my first novel that I was going to put in the bin. And it's now a clear story that I want to write. And so, which feels amazing,
That
right?
is
It
amazing. Yeah.
feels like I've come like almost full circle. But what I did realize also in this whole process was in 2020, I started a blog called 600 Words on Life. And then I got
It's a good
so
one.
into,
It's a good one.
thank you.
Yeah.
I got so into my novel writing that I really put it on the shelf. But I also, again, this is like we learn as we go along. I'm a different writer now than I was in 2020. I also it also never really had like a real focus. And what I've learned about myself is that I am someone who thrives on a bit of structure. And having a clear focus to what I'm doing, or knowing what I want my message to be, and building out from that. I've done the whole, I'm just gonna write this thing that feels good, and I do think that there is always a place for that. But I was looking at my blog, and I was like, I think I need to be writing and publishing more often for me. I need to be like actively putting my words out into the world. Not because I want to get really popular or I want everyone to love them, but because when I was doing that before, too close to me. When I was doing that before, it th those articles or those blog posts, they always had really low readership. But then once in a while, someone would message me and be like, I just read this and it is exactly how I've been feeling. And I just wanted to say that you hit the nail on the head, or it's you know, it, I really loved it, or that's exactly how I've been feeling. And like that's what I love about writing as well, is that like connecting with people. And because I was so determined to get my novel written, I stopped doing that. So I was like, okay, I could either go back to 600 words, but I don't think it aligns with what I, you know, I don't think it's, I don't think it aligns with what I want my voice to be now as a writer. I think it needs more focus. And so then I started looking at Substacks and I started brainstorming ideas like, what do I want to write about when I'm not writing a fictional story? And so I think by the time this goes out, I will have possibly started a new, well, it's technically a newsletter, but it's a Substack, right? So it's also kind of a blog. And it's called Bang Average. And it's basically like, how do we how do how do us bog standard humans, how do we get through the bad times, how do we thrive in the good times, and how do we find joy? Because I think those are really core parts of being a human, and there's so much out in the world, in this capitalist world that we live in, that it's like, be better, get stronger, climb higher and quicker, do it quicker, do everything quicker. Like, you've got a flaw, you must fix it, buy this thing, and you're earning this much, but you could be earning this much, so, you know, loser. And I reject every single element of that, because that's why I applied for that job.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I must grow. I'm not growing. I must earn more money so I can grow. And like that suits a lot of people. And obviously, you need to earn a certain amount to live, which fair enough. But like, that's just so suffocating and exhausting. And like, I don't think that equals human happiness or human contentment. I think the things that equal human contentment are like, you know, oh, I've discovered I really love hiking, and oh, I, you know, I found my community of friends by going wild swimming. Because, and so what I want now with my writing is I want to explore the things that make us like human, really. Which sounds like a tagline I should stick in a t-shirt, but how do we get through the bad times? How do we thrive? Like all the little ways we thrive, and the small ways we find joy, like the everyday small ways we find joy. So yeah. Well, thank you for listening to my TED talk.
I loved it. I was here for it. Yes.
Oh gosh, but
How do you
like
feel?
yeah.
Having
I
said it all.
feel yeah, I feel good. I feel calm now. Like I feel more in control of my emotions, but also I feel more in control of where I am at in this world, but also where I'm going. Like I have a better sense of, you know, what the next step is and what I'm working on. Because if I'm not actively working on my writing, then I'm just in a job I don't care about.
Yeah.
Because also part of the context is, you know, I'm 30. Me and my partner are not like aching to have kids. We're not saving to buy a house. Like, this is that we've both said that this is the time in our lives where we want to focus on our career and going and traveling, like traveling to other countries and like our career. So it's my main focus, you know. So if I'm not working on it, so yeah. So yeah. Felt good.
That was great. I'm glad. Okay, let me, I've got a few. I've got some
Yes.
follow-up questions. Okay, the novel thing. So, like, It sounds like, first of all, you're going to obviously send me that, right? The link to that so I can sign up for your Substack. That's
Oh,
obvious.
yes,
Of course.
absolutely. Yes.
We could talk more about that because I haven't used Substack. When I first started my newsletter, I had it inside my website. I have a Weebly, and then they limited the number you could send and blah, blah, blah. So I just do it as an email still because I can just send it all out to a certain number of people in my email. I don't have enough people signed up that like Yahoo is like stopping me from just sending it as an email. So I just do it that way.
Nice.
Because people still have to sign up. They still have to agree that they want
Yeah.
my monthly essay about whatever, which is what I do, which is for my newsletter. Like I don't like I just read Tanya's. I was like, man, she's so busy. I
Yeah.
feel she's the
Yes,
busiest human ever.
that is the one word that I would use. Yeah. I mean, I
Yeah.
would use a lot of words to describe Tanya, but the one at the top is
Yeah.
busy.
She's so busy. I know I just read her
Yeah.
newsletter. I was like, damn, what have I
Yeah,
been
yeah.
doing? No,
I
but
know.
all of that to say, like everybody handles their newsletter differently. So I appreciate that this is what you're going to do with yours. You're going to do with this. So I like that. So my question is, I guess, and this may be dumb. So hear me out, or and I don't mean it to be dumb, but I'm just going to
No,
say it.
carry
I'm
on.
just going to ask, is it that you need a novel or that you need a book? And I'm not saying want, I'm saying need. Jess B. Davies, what does she need? Does she need a novel or does she need a book to call her own?
I think I don't know. I think. Well, what would you say the difference is between them? Like the novel is the fictional story, and the book is just anything I want it to be.
Correct.
Yeah. I do. That's such a good question.
Because I'm hearing, here's me hearing objectively for the first
Yeah,
time
no,
hearing
this
about the
is good.
Substack.
Yeah.
I'm hearing you are going to write the first draft of a book in a Substack. And then when it's done at certain points in time, you're going to go, oh, I had this good essay, or I had this good thought, and I had this thing. And where is the connective tissue that I can pull that back and republish it as an essay collection? That's a book, or I could, 'cause I mean, 52 Love, speaking of our friend, she put that out for free, and now that is going to be a book, right?
Yeah.
My friend Kyle Stuck, he put his comics out online on his website, Ominous Media, and Evil Cast, which was great. That's how he and I met. He came on my show. We talked about his comic, like just cold. He sent a cold email to Chris and Dave. They sent it to me. Now Kyle and I are pals.
Nice.
And yeah, and his book is published. You can get it. You can go to the bookstore and buy Evil Cast as a book. He's got a few other things, but he just gave them away for free on his website. And
Yeah.
then he got people interested, and then he got some reviews right from that. And then he whatever, and he pulled them down, and now it's a book. So my question, it the question stands, because I'm hearing somebody who isn't a novelist. I'm hearing somebody who is either writing a novella. Or I'm hearing somebody who's writing essays that tell a story, interconnected essays. Like I know Allison is working on essay collections, right?
Yeah.
And I've written essay collections, and I'm part of essay collections. And so essays, that's writing, that's a book.
Yeah. You know what? I think I'm still figuring it out.
That's fine too, right?
That's it. Like, I think because like I only started thinking of myself. So, like 2021, I was like, okay, maybe I'm gonna give this writing thing a go, or I'm gonna give it more energy. Only in 2022, it took me a while. It took me at least a year to be able to start calling myself a writer, without even that was having my blog online. That was having I keep forgetting that I used to write for a fitness magazine when I was in uni, but I
Right.
just completely forget about that. Like,
Yeah.
I've always been able to write to a good, like, but.
You write for a living.
Yeah, I write for a living, exactly. So I think I'm trying to figure out. I mean, so it's taken me this long to figure out what I think my voice is and where I think I add value, and what I enjoy writing. Like, I enjoy being funny in what I write. because I enjoy reading things and funny, and I enjoy making people laugh. But I always feel the desperate need to be honest, which is why I've just accepted that I'm like an oversharer, because I love being honest with people, because I feel like that's how you connect with people. And so I really did enjoy writing the novel, and I enjoy and I really I love see the novel I see is this, I'm giving the novel a wider berth. Like I'm letting the novel be something that I chip away at slowly, you know, like I this thing that like develops, and I can take my time, and I can really live with the characters in my head, and I can do my research, and I don't feel like I'm in a hurry, because I feel like I am also actively putting my words out into the world. I do think I need that. Like, because I think that I'm still, I think that I still constantly need, not constantly, I think I still need now and then to confirm to myself that I am a writer by putting my words out into the world. And also,
Yes.
I think that's because of the world that we live in.
Yes.
You know, that's and so, but also I am constantly I do always have commentary in my head, because when I've learned this from Rhea, I'm now very curious when I meet people. I love asking questions. I love learning about people's lives. I like learning how people make friends as an adult, or how they f like the things that bring them joy in their lives, or you know, oh, you had depression? Like, how did you get through that? Like, what was your day by day? Like, what got you out of bed? Or did you even get out of bed? Because those are the things that relate to people. So I wasn't even thinking about it like a series of connected essays, because they, in my head, they're going to be just,
Well,
I'm
they
just
don't
going to,
have to be at first. That's not what
yeah.
right. So I'm saying you're going to write these, and this is like the first draft of something, but it's there, and you're sharing the first draft of something. It's like beta tested to the world. And
Yeah.
then
I love that.
I just, that's what
I
I
love
heard
that.
you say you were doing. So I just was asking, like,
Yeah.
if the novel had to be a novel, or if it was a book. And I don't mean that in a, when I say, what do you need to do? Because I understand it is a need, and writers and creatives understand the need. It's not a, oh, I'd like to write a book. Well, that's cool. And that's awesome. Something you'd like to do that. And you should totally do that if you'd like to. But you, Jess, don't like to. You don't want to. You need to. There's something, and it's not because you want to be rich doing it, it's because you just need to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And so maybe you're right. Maybe the thing that I need right now is more of a book, because I'm the novel, I felt like the novel, I think, turned into something that I was. It's like when I stopped writing it, I was like, okay, well, then what story am I going to write? But I think now I'm going to explore the, I don't, you know, I don't need to just be working on a story in order to be, I want to work on the story, because I think it's a story I want to write. But I don't, but I need to, I need to just be putting my words out there, because I think there's, you know, that's, yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's a very good question.
You know, it's okay if you don't have the. I just, and again, we didn't have an agenda today, right? It was just like, let's just talk about writing.
No, but
And
it's
so,
such a good, it's a very good way of looking at it,
yeah, because
you know?
I feel like, you know, my first novel, air quotes, was, so I'll tell you this. So I didn't know how to write a novel. So I was decent at short stories. I was a pretty good short story writer. I was a journalist like you. I had a ton of bylines for like local newspapers and magazines or whatever. And so I started writing a short story. I wrote a short story in undergrad, university, as you would say, college for me. And my freshman year, first year creative writing class, I wrote this story. This is one of my questions that I'll come back around to the character or whatever. So anyway, I read this character. She's super cool. I'm a big fan of her. I read it as a short story, turned it in, worked on it, was it part of my final portfolio, but that character kind of stuck with me. And I really, really liked her. And so then I would wrote another story, like in real time from her life. And then I wrote another story in real time. And then as a big J.D. Salinger fan, I learned that Catcher in the Rye was written that way, as a series of short stories about the same character. He published, the first time you meet Holden Caulfield, it's like chapters 2, 3, and the final chapter. And it was in a short story. And like there was a little another sibling, like when he goes to visit Phoebe, there's another baby that he ends up cutting from the final. That's published, like that's canon technically of Holden Caulfield. And then he pull, you know, and he didn't pull them back because they're published, but then he put them together. So it's like, well, I'm going to tell the story this way. I'm going to tell the story in short stories. And then I got to the, and this was like 4 years I worked on this. And everyone, music, you're not going to be shocked that music was involved. But the book was called Life's Rich Pageant, which was the name of a story of an REM novel. The main character was a big REM fan, and she wore this hat.
Oh,
This
cool.
red floppy hat that I have tattooed on my arm.
Oh, I love that.
And she was called Alexandria Crum, at Crum, Krum. I was a big fan of her. And so I told this story, and it took me about 4 or 5 years. And I just kind of, in my life, as I grew, Alex kind of grew along with me, and I'd come back and visit her, and then I put it together and I kind of self-published it. And just, it's not great. I would love to go back and visit her later. Then later, when I was going through my divorce, I wanted to have a divorce party, and I thought that's a dick move. So, but I thought, you know who could do it? Alex could. So I brought her back and was like, I'm going to write a novel. Alex, I'm going to learn how to write a novel because I know Alex. Like this book I've put out, this book isn't a book. It's a bunch of short stories about the same character, but you could read the chapters out of order because they were all just different snippets in her life, right? So I tried, I got stymied, but I loved the character. So I got this tattoo because she was so important to me as a character. Like she was the book, she was the character that said to me, I can be a writer. She said, I invented her. And while she still lives on, and I've talked to her sometimes, and we hang out, we've kind of grown up together, like she's my age, like she's right there with me the whole time. So every once in a while I think, oh, I wonder what Alex is doing. And I've got the tattoo there, and I don't have the hat anymore for all kinds of stupid reasons that I won't divulge here. But the hat is forever, right? The hat is permanent. But I didn't know what I was doing, but I wrote it. It was done. It was a book. And then I've done other things where I've taken different essays and different things and put them together. And I just put it in the universe, like you said. And, six people bought it. And that was cool, right? It was like, I got a review once. And he was like, cool. The goal was always having one. So the reason I asked, that was the question, is because, like, what is it? Like, what are the things? Why do you need to do it? And what do you need ultimately? And if you need to look at your own shelf, at your own book, and is
There
that,
it is.
there it is right there. Is that what it is? Like, it's not that, like you said, it's not like you're fighting with the whole internet, Jess. You're fighting with the world. The time of Stephen King is over, right? There's never going to be another, like those people, the Kings, the Sauls, the Koontzes, the Pattersons, the Ivanoviches, they're done. Like, they're not even writing their own stuff anymore. Stephen King is, but Janet Ivanovich has a co-writer on everything. James Patterson has a co-writer on everything. Dean Koontz still writes stuff, but like Dean Koontz isn't even Dean Koontz's real name. Like, nobody knows who that really is, right? That's like a whole. There was a while, the reason he has so many names is because at one point in time, apparently, the rumor is he had four books on the charts under four different names because he was so prolific. And they didn't want too many Dean Koontz books coming out, so we started creating these other
Oh,
personas.
wow.
Yeah, but that's over. That time is over. Like those, there's no Taylor Jenkins Reid. Maybe is somebody, and Lillian, the Moriarty sisters, Lillian more so. Maybe, but mostly because their stuff is being turned into other things. Like, so they're making enough money. So like, and I like them both. I like the Moriarty sisters. I like I like Taylor Jenkins Reid. I don't like all her books, but the four interconnected, the Daisy Jones, the Nick books are amazing. I think the Carrie Soto is back is exceptional. The tennis one, it's glorious. I loved it so much. But for most of us, you're doing something else. Allison and I have talked about this. Like most people who are writers are teachers. Most people who are filmmakers are doing something else. It's hard. Or you're going to be a producer of a show because that's where you can make your money producing this reality show or producing this game show. We're doing, and that's work. That's hard work. You're doing work. It's real work. It's creative. It's fun. You're getting up. You're doing the thing you're trained to do. Meanwhile, you're working furiously over here so you can make your indie movie, right? So what is the thing that you're looking to do? Like what? And you don't have to know the answer, Jess. You don't have to know, but like, that's the question. Just hearing you talk, that's the only thing I can think is like, what do you need? What do you need out of the writing? What is it that you need from it? Because I'm still not 100% sure what I need from it, other than I need to do it.
I think I definitely need to do it. I have always thought, I have always had this image of my head, like part of the dream is to have something published on my shelf, like you said, on my shelf with my name on it.
Pretty cool.
But even when I was not in crisis mode, that always seemed very far away. Because I know a lot of people in the publishing industry, and I know how hard it is to get a book published. So I know that, and I knew that was very far away. Now I'm realizing I miss my words connecting with people, or my words matter, my words making a difference for other people. But I don't mean loads of people, it means a lot to me when someone says, I read what you wrote. It means even more if they say, and it really struck a chord with me. That I get so much from that. Like I really get a lot from that. And like my friends are getting married and they've asked me to write a poem and say it as part of the ceremony. And I started crying. I was in this party and I started crying. And because it like you want my words as part of your big day, like that's insane. That's wild to me. And like that means that you see a lot of value in my words. And like I see a lot of value in my words, but I want my words to connect with other people. I never want my words to make people feel intimidated or small. That's why I hate influencers so much because they just make people feel small and they make people feel not enough. I want my words to make people feel like seen
Seen.
and yeah.
Yeah, that's why my covers are the way they are. Right? There's no, you don't, they're all outlines.
Yeah.
Because I want you to be the silhouette. Again, the straight white girl thing that Jane Austen gets. And yes, her books have straight white girls in them. But that's just not the only story. Jane's not just telling that story. I don't want it to just be that story. So that's why I want everybody to look at the cover and be like, oh, male, female, non-binary, gay, straight, doesn't matter. Whatever your race is, how tall. And the only thing you need to know about Junior is she's very short. Because there's jokes. Like her being short is part of the plot. It's like
And his scarves. Oh my gosh, his
the scarves,
scarves.
do you like that? Yeah, they
I
are.
love the
Yeah,
scarves.
yeah, yeah.
Because you can tell, like, when she's anxious, she'll like mess around with
Touches
her
it.
scarf.
Yeah, she's got that nervous condition. Yeah, there's a big reveal about that later. It comes,
Okay, cool.
I can't wait for you to get to the end and then we can talk about it some more. I
Yes,
have a
please.
tomorrow at 6 p.m. my time, Eastern Standard Time. I've been invited to a local book club.
Oh, they're
They've
gonna talk
they're
about your book?
yes, with me there.
Yes. Oh, so did you ever, when you were writing your novel, was that, did you ever like see that happening for you?
Never, never days. You write, writing is such a weird thing. You do it when nobody's asking you to do it. Like the reason I went to school and learn and went to get my MFA was because I needed to crack how to write a novel. Like I said, with Alex, I brought her back up a couple of times, and every time I just couldn't figure, I didn't know how to write a novel. And I think the second book was called You Want to Go Forever, which is the name of an R.E.M. song, a line from an R.E.M. song. And it got, I don't know, I did okay. I was cruising along, and then it just hit the wall, man. And it was like I couldn't figure out how to end it. So and then the book I was writing, The Will, that I ended up writing, took years and years to write. And it took me two, I came to my MFA program, maybe 50 pages of it, and I finished it for my thesis. So it was however long it took me to get to the 50 pages, and then another 2 years. And that one still is sitting on a shelf, right? It's nobody's interested in it. I think it's good. It's hard to say, but I do think it's good. Like, because I don't like to say that about myself, but I do think it's good. I'm proud of it. But it's clearly an MFA thesis. It's seven characters written in first person present tense. Each has their own voice, right? So it's a hot. It's a lot. Don't do that, by the way. I just can't recommend to everybody not to do seven different unique characters written in first
But you
person.
got a lot out of that.
I learned a lot about myself as a writer. I learned how to write a novel. I learned how much I love characters. I mean, I've always loved characters. Characters are always the thing for me. But so no, I never thought that. So when I started Welcome to Mansfield, it was just for me. It was a cheeky little fun love letter to Mansfield Park, just for me. I didn't even know it would be a whole series. It was just only became a series because I left all the other characters in there. The other Jane Austen characters are already exist in the book. But then I could pitch it that way. And so now I've finished book three.
Oh, well done.
It is, I'm revising now. I'm about 50, it's about three, it's about 110,000 words. And yeah, and I'm on, yeah, it's a lot, but it's only like 325 pages because there's not a ton of dialogue. The narrator does all the talking. The narrator, what an asshole the narrator is.
The narrator is very bossy,
Very, very much
very
so.
bossy.
Has
Like,
things to say.
like, but also tells you what you're not gonna find out. I love the
Jack says
narrator.
Jack likes the, he's the it's like the avuncular uncle. That's what he's like, he's like wah, wah, wah. And yeah, the I guess that's he didn't say that. He said the avuncular narrator, which means uncle. He didn't say avuncular. He didn't say the same thing twice. Yes, the narrator. And then in the second book, when I got the notes back for Welcome, or for the other Dashwood, that other Dashwood girl, the narrator says, because it's not that kind of book all the time, because Maggie, or in my version, Marianne Dashwood has a potty mouth. But because it's not that kind of book, you never hear her say any of the
Yes. Oh, I
swears.
love
And
that.
so the narrator reminds everybody all the time that like Marianne is off screen swearing all the time. Because I
That's
think
brilliant.
Marianne Dashwood is an asshole,
Yeah.
personally.
Nice. And you got to write the character like that.
Yeah,
That's
and
the
so
thing, it was fun for you.
yeah, it
Like,
was fun. So I didn't ever think I'd be invited. So I've actually got this book club, and I've got two more book clubs.
oh my God, I'm so happy. You know what? I'm
It's
so
really
happy for
cool.
you.
Thank you. It's really cool to do. I did a bookstore event, so those are just really cool, and it is an honor every time. And I'm
Again,
gonna.
because you get to connect with people over
Yes.
your words.
Yeah.
I think that is, I think what that's the biggest pleasure I take from writing, and I think the biggest pleasure I'll always take. Like, I do want to publish a book. I
Yeah.
do. I want a book with my name on it, and I do want it to be a story, because I want to create something out of nothing. I love the idea of creating something out of nothing. Like, you created
Well,
this whole thing, you
you
know?
did, but you are also, but listen to yourself because you are a historian and by nature, and you, whether you studied history or not, you are. When I hear you talk, I'm like, that's a history nerd talking.
I do love history,
I
yeah.
hear it in you every
Histories and
time.
castles specifically.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. But I hear you talk, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a his she's got a historian's heart. So obviously, that's what you're working on. Whether you're working on it or not. You're working on a historical fiction, a work of
Yeah,
historical fiction, whether it's
absolutely.
taking place in the now or not, it will resonate as
Yeah.
historical fiction because there's like for you, that important. So right now, work on the, and again, I have collections of essays. I have fiction. I have nonfiction. There's creative nonfiction. There's all kinds of stories to tell, and maybe that is the story. Like you take the story of a person. So like, there's a writer called Chris Crutcher. He writes young adult books in America, and he is a child psychologist. And what he does is he takes his patients' stories that he thinks are important enough to share, and then he fictionalizes the shit out of them, and he sets them all in the same region, which isn't where he lives. And then he tells those stories, and he puts them out in the world, and so that people so connect to his stories because they're so real, because they are real. So you are creating something out of nothing, but like you didn't write Gilgamesh, right? Like that already happened, right? You didn't like Gilgamesh and Beowulf. Those are even the same story. Jesus is just Hercules, right? So it's like you have to like, sorry, Christians, I'm sorry. I apologize in advance if that blew your mind. But like
You're always starting from somewhere.
you are. And so that's
Yeah,
the thing. But it is.
absolutely.
And that's the thing. Like my books are very, well, obviously Jane Austen books, but they're my books, my versions of books. My Reverend Norris
Yeah,
is
and
different than the Norris. Yeah.
you still got to create them, because
I
I think
did.
what the Substack will give me is my commentary. My
Yeah.
commentary, like I do want it to be a way that I explore what works for other people, like
Yeah.
but it will essentially be more commentary than creation. Obviously, there's always an element of creation in there, but yeah. So I guess it's not creating something from nothing.
No, it is.
You're
I know. But what I'm
always
saying is,
creating something from something.
right.
Yeah,
I just wanted
there's
you to
the
not put
yeah.
that pressure on yourself. I wasn't
Oh
trying to be
no.
disparaging. I didn't want you to be like, oh, well, somebody else has also told that story. Well, that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
Yeah, and you're completely right.
the trick is that how do you tell the story? So it's not like even the greatest minds, right? Even the seemingly most original minds in the history of writing, like the two books we discussed, Still Life and The Book Thief. Those were very original. There was magical realism, there's all kinds of things, but they're still rooted in things, right? The
Absolutely.
Holocaust still had to, World War II had to
Yeah.
happen for both of those books to happen, right? So they're both
Yeah.
like, what about the trauma of war? Let's
Yeah.
deal with that, right? So
Yeah.
that is the thing. And then they
Yeah.
made the characters. And like, Marcus Zusak's grandma was called Liesl. I mean, he
Yeah.
even just named her after her. So it's like, so I think that idea of, I hear what you're saying. I just like, I don't want you to put the pressure on yourself that
You're
like,
completely right.
if I'm not Tolkien, I'm nothing. Nobody's him.
No.
And
You're,
even
yeah.
he's not him. Even he admits that was war trauma.
Yeah,
Right?
absolutely. No, I completely agree, and I do, and that's the thing. Like, when with something like writing, when that's a very core part of who you are,
Yeah.
constantly navigating your, because it's an identity thing, right? And it's like a purpose thing, and so there's so many emotions that come with that.
Yeah, because
And I think you're
you're
right, the
emotionally
expectations is part of
raw.
that.
Yeah, you're emotionally raw. You're
Like
really
what?
literally showing the world your whole everything.
Yeah, but it's also like, what does it mean to be a good writer? That's a nice chunky question. And
Yeah.
I think the expectation thing is I think is a very big part of that. Because there's a fear that you're going to write a story that someone else has already written. But of course it's not going to be something someone else has already written, because it's your story. And unless you plagiarized
Right,
it, but it's
then you're an
your
asshole.
story.
Yeah,
Yeah, then you're an
exactly.
asshole and you shouldn't be writing.
That's right. Then you're just a thief. Right. No, you're absolutely right. It is, and there are high expectations, and it is we grew up, and again, I'm 20 years older than you, but it's still like we grew up in a different era where, and the books we've read at school and even still the books that people read at school, the stuff that gets canonized, those are generally people who did that for a living. Right? Or people who are canonized, like Emily Dickinson did it for a living, but she didn't make any money, right? But it was her life. And I just read a book by Matt Haig, which was gonna bring up to you when you were talking about something. It's called The Humans by Matt Haig, which I definitely think you should read. But he writes in there about It's about an alien who's trying to understand the human condition, but he discovers Emily Dickinson.
Oh,
And
nice.
so everything changed for him when he read, you know, because Emily Dickinson wrote because she had no choice. Right? She was not going to do anything else. And that's what I loved about the TV series Dickinson, which is beautiful for all the things. And I got to cover it on Femon, which was a delight. But I loved that show so much. But what I loved most about it is that they understood that their take on Emily Dickinson. And then, of course, one of my heroes from the last century, from the most recent century, Sylvia Plath, shows up in that show as well. They don't have any choice. Like, those two tortured women, tortured in different ways, had no, like, this was all they could do. Like, I have to, if I don't write this, I will burst.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's that, it wasn't about the money. It was about, if I don't write this, I will burst. And you know, like, sometimes you feel a little dirty reading Emily Dickinson or one of my heroes, Kafka's stuff, because they didn't really want you to read it, but, like, too bad.
We
have it now. You're dead. And I'm sorry to disrespect that you didn't want us to read it, but the world would be worse without it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's that feeling, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
I need to write, like, if I'm not, if I don't, I explained it to my partner, like, so he goes to the gym at least 4 or 5 times a week. And if he doesn't, his mental health is literally in the bin.
Right.
Like, it's his main way of coping with his emotions and the stresses of life. And, you know, if he can't go to the gym, it's like he can't breathe. And I was like, that is what writing is to me. And I was trying to explain it to him one day because he was like, why are you getting so upset? And I was like, because I haven't had any time to write this week. And it's like, writing to me is what exercising is to you. It's like, if I can't write, I can't breathe.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah. I understand. I mean, I have to, like, just because of my anxiety and ADHD, if I don't do both, it's bad. I exercise every day.
Fair. Yeah. Same. Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. It's like,
yeah.
And we all have that thing that, like, exactly. It's like, it's all, it's like, it's the thing that, it's the career thing, but it's also like a big, that's why I said it's like a big part of who I am. And the same for you. It's like, it's a big part of your identity, but also your coping mechanism.
Right. Because I would love to do it for a living. I would love to be a writer who teaches instead of a teacher who writes. Yeah. Like, I want to keep teaching. I would like to, like, when I sit down and look, so the new book, I started it on July 1st and I finished draft one, which was just under 110,000 words, mid-February. And there were weeks in there where I didn't write at all. And so, like, because when I write, like, over winter break, my holiday break for work, I wrote like almost 30,000 words in just a few weeks because I went go into this weird fugue state.
Yeah.
And I just don't even know what's happening. And that's all I'm doing all day. And it's in those moments, and I mean this, and I don't mean it the way that it sounds, but the fact is, like, I understand how Stephen King does what he does because it's all he has to do.
Yeah.
And more importantly, it's all he gets to do.
Yeah.
Like, he gets to do it because he's earned it. I'm not, and actually, it's all because his wife, Tabby, dug, just talk about the bin. I love how British people say in the bin. So I'm going to use it right now.
Yes, do it.
He literally, I'll say it like a British person.
Literally
dug Carrie out of the bin. He was so upset by it because the girls are so mean, which they are, the other girls, the mean girls. He hated them, that he was afraid of that book. Like, it hurt his feelings what they did to her. And Tabby pulled it out of the garbage and and submitted it.
Wow.
He didn't want to. It hurt his feelings to write. But he was teaching high school. He was around those girls. He was just writing what he saw. And so Tabby was, and so was she at the time. I think she was a librarian, a high school librarian. And so it's like, they were there. They saw this. She's like, no, this is it. You've captured it. This is important. And Carrie is still, I mean, I like a lot of his, I don't know how you feel about Stephen King, but I mean, that book is still almost perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I've not actually read Stephen King.
Okay. It's glorious. It is. Yeah. It's way different than either of the films. The way that it's written, it's kind of written like a collection of news reports and whatever, but it's very good. But it's like one of those things where, like, but in that time that I got to take to just sit and write and do, I understood what it was like to be him. And I don't mean that I understood what it's like to be an alcoholic cokehead. I don't mean that I understood what it's like to be the most famous writer in the world. What I mean is, I understood what it was like to get that much done.
Yeah, wow.
And just do it and just sit and do it. And like right now, like Tanya and I have the Comics Lit thing that we've edited and put together. I've got a couple of books, a couple of novels coming out. I'm going to do a short story or two for Tanya's collections. I've got another project that I'm doing. And those are things like, I just want to do those things. I just want to make art. And I know it's such a first world problem thing, it sounds like privileged white guy, but I don't think so. I think like historically, there's art.
Yeah.
The world is like, art matters.
So much.
It
So
does.
much.
Yeah.
And again, I'll say it again. It's a
Yes.
big part of human connection.
Yeah.
'Cause you can make people feel seen through art.
Correct. You exist. Those people exist. Your favorite, the reason I knew I was okay to not be like the people from my town was because art.
Yeah.
There, my friends were in these books, and then you find friends in real life who read those books. So like Heath and I, one of my friends from high school and I, we've started doing this thing every other week is when we're recording, whether they're all going to come out every other week or not. We're just getting set. It's called Heath and Tony Talk About. And that's it. So it's like we've got a list and he's got a 20-sided die and we roll it and that's what we talk about. And
Oh,
then
I
I
love
then
that.
yeah, and it'll be like we'll talk for an hour because he lives in Colorado now. And so like I've got an hour. So every other Friday, 10 o'clock my time, 8 o'clock his time at night, we just sit and talk for an hour about whatever and we're gonna put it out in the world. So this last time was Highlander, whatever. But so it's just like our conversations. But what it is we found each other as people who needed to find each other because we were these people who were straight white boys in a town where that was the only thing to be. But we were like, but there's these other people and we don't like these people. Like, we don't
Yeah.
like these guys. We're not these guys. The reason that Heathers is the movie I've seen the most is because I get it. Like, I understand Sherwood, Ohio. Like, I understand it. It's
Yeah.
not that I wanted to blow everybody up or kill them and make it look like a suicide, but I also understood like how hard it was to be seen in a town like that.
Yeah.
And it was art. The comic writer Denny O'Neil, he wrote Batman, he wrote Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and Green Lantern, Green Arrow did this thing called the Hard Traveling Heroes, where Green Lantern, Green Arrow literally go on a road trip across the United States and see all the stuff. And it's really great, so good. It's like real honest, and there's like racism, sexism, homophobia, you know, Speedy that becomes a junkie. Like it's really rough, but it's so true. And then he invented John Stewart, the Green Lantern, the African American Green Lantern who's from Detroit. And he's like, that guy's awesome. And he wouldn't wear a mask. And he's like, look, and I was like, look at that guy. He is so unabashed. He's like, yeah, I'm a fucking Green Lantern. Why would I wear a mask? I'm badass. Look at me being a Green Lantern. And he's like, that guy, John Stewart. Favorite Green Lantern, like so awesome. And then later somebody else invented Jessica Cruz, who is a Green Lantern who has anxiety. I was like, well,
Yes,
she is now
good. We
maybe
all need
she is
that.
now my favorite Green Lantern. But like,
Yeah.
but so like Denny O'Neil, I always say, like, we were raised by him. Like he showed us it was okay to be these people because of art, because of comic books.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think art will also teach you a lot about other people, and in surprising ways. So, like, I think even a couple of days ago, I was having a conversation with my dad, and one of the main ways we communicate with each other, like we are very good at chatting with each other, but one of our a core part of how we communicate with each other is telling each other what TV shows we've been
Sure.
watching.
Yeah.
And he turned around to me the other day, and this is my dad. Like he grew up in the like 60s. At 15, he was sent across the world to join the British Army. Like he grew like you know and he very very complicated, like quite a traditional man. You know, he loves gambling and like he loves sports, and when I say gambling, I mean like race, like racing, like horse racing. Loves going down the pub, like that's where his community is. And then he turned around to me the other day and he's like, oh, what did I watch on Netflix the other day? Oh, One Day. Oh, I binged it. I binged it in a whole day. It was amazing. It was so good. And I looked at him Like I just unlocked this new part of who he is.
I've not seen it. I love that book. I've not
It
seen the
is. Well,
show. Yeah.
it's a romantic drama
Yeah, yeah,
through and
yeah.
through. And it is like my mum was like, oh, hated it. Couldn't watch it. So boring. And then my dad's like, I binged the whole thing in one day. And I looked at him like literally like through this new lens. I was like, did you? You really loved it? Because I loved it, but I love that stuff, right? And he's like, yeah, it was amazing. And I'm like, what? What just happened? So art will teach you about other people,
It does.
you
Yeah,
know?
it does. It for real. Okay, let's do rapid fire as we're coming up on the end. I
Okay,
don't know how
ready.
you, I don't, I mean, you know, it's getting, I don't know if you're like Rhea and this is way past your bedtime.
Oh no.
I
No,
don't
don't
know the
worry.
rules. Okay, all right.
I might have my pajamas on, but I'm not ready for
That's
the
not what I
day.
meant. Okay, but I just, okay. So, couple of things. This was, first of all, we're not, we still maybe have like 15, 20 minutes. I just got some things I wanted to make sure I asked you and
Yes.
got your like quick fire opinion. First of all, I just want to say to you and listeners, that was amazing. Thank you for saying all that.
Oh,
That was
absolutely.
lovely. Like, I didn't know what we were going to talk about. And then you just, like you said, thank you for listening to my TED Talk. Absolutely. This was the Just Be Davies writer, colon,
Thank you.
as you guys say over there. Do you say it that way because you don't want to, like, do you call the part of your body also the colon, or do you say colon and then you use the part of grammar? You say it differently to determine which is which. Because in America, we say it the same way.
I very rarely use either of those words because I still don't technically know how to use a colon.
Okay.
And at it was only a few years ago that I realized the difference between a colon and a pelvis. So
Sure.
colon, I'll tell you when I get to the stage
Okay.
in my life where I'm using those words.
Fair enough. That's totally fair. Okay, there you go. Anyway, so Jess B. Davies, colon writer is how I'm saying that though.
Perfect.
Thank you for that. That was truly lovely. I can't wait. I don't think you even know what you said. I can't wait for you to listen back.
Yeah. I mean,
There
that's always the way, isn't it? You get
Yeah,
to the
it
end,
was.
and like, that was fun.
Yeah, and you're like, what are
That
we talking
reminds
about?
me.
I know. It's like you don't want to be a megalomaniac and listen back to your own shows, but genuinely, I don't know what I said.
Yeah. Same.
Like,
And then you've got, and then you've got to, then I've got to like write a little thing for social. Yeah.
yeah, you get it. You don't have to do any of that.
Well, but I'll share it because I
You'll
did
share it.
invent
You'll say it out
Instagram.
loud, and then you'll send me the links to the new Substack and stuff because we're definitely going to put those in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Okay, so. A couple of things I wanted to ask you. So, like, I'm a character guy. Characters, I invent characters, character first, character, character, character. If I don't have the characters, I can't tell a story. I walk around, I talk to them, I think about them, I hang out with them, they have their own soundtracks. So, are you, when you're writing, is that the most, like, can you start a story until you know your people?
I think I'm actually story first at the moment.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
still learning. I know that there's no story without good characters. But I do think of the, because like you said, a lot of my stories are historical. So
Right.
I think about the story first and its significance, and I build out from there.
That's cool. Nice. I'm the totally, I don't even know what the story will be sometimes until
I
halfway through. And
love
as I'm
that.
doing my revision, like I figured out what the ending of this story would be, of the third one, Mary Bennett's version of Pride and Prejudice. There's a running gag, which I'll tell you off air. I want to just see if people pick it up. There's a running gag in the book that pays off at the end.
Nice.
And I realized I was like 50 pages in and I was like, oh shit, I need to do this. So I had to go back and make a few changes. And I actually am catching some of the ones I didn't get. But because by the time I got to the end, it was so ingrained, I was shocked to be like, what? This can't happen. That's not, you know, so like there are
That.
plot points and stuff because that just, but it's all about a character. It's about one of the characters in the book. So characters matter to me. So you mentioned that in your book, the one that may or may not be in the bin, that may be in the bin, but may not be in the bin, but may come out
Yeah,
of the
kind
bin,
of
but may
half
be
half.
part, yeah. I have something to say about that too with the book I wrote for my MFA. But you said his. So you're writing about a man. I mostly write about female, like a lot of my leads are female characters. How do you feel about that? Like, do you think like you liked Welcome to Man, you're like enjoying Welcome to Mansfield? At no point were you like, cock man oppressor, like because I'm a man writing about women.
No, oh no.
your how do you feel about that? When people when and again, like Stephen King's first book was about a teenage girl with telekinesis. So like and that was part of it too. He was nervous about that. We live in a time when like people are finally being aware that appropriation is and misappropriation is a thing, which is good, which is good. We should look back on what Mickey Rooney did in Breakfast at Tiffany's and be like, eesh, bad news. If people don't know what that is, you should just Google that. Get on your, you can Bing Mickey Rooney Breakfast at Tiffany's. Hey, Alexa, why is it problematic that who Mickey Rooney played in Breakfast at Tiffany's? If you don't know, do you know what I'm talking about, Jess? Have you seen Breakfast at Tiffany's? All right, I'm going to let you discover it on your own. So
Okay.
you will later, you'll email me, be like, holy shit.
Okay.
Anyway, so we understand that. There's still a conversation like Oscar Isaacs plays Moon Knight and Moon Knight's Judaism is a big thing, and Oscar Isaac has played Jewish people before, but Oscar Isaac is not a practicing Jew, right? Stanley Tucci has played lots of Jewish people, but he's not that. Sarah Silverman gets really mad at any time Tony Shalhoub shows up and plays a Jewish person, and she calls it putting on Jew face, which, so there's this conversation about that, like, at what point, and like, my problem is like, and then there's people the other way, like, well, if you're not a queer actor, you shouldn't play a queer character on in a movie. And I don't know how I feel about that because it's like, well, I don't only want queer characters to have to play. I want them to be able to. So it's so all of that to say is like, so I've asked, I've talked to this, I've talked to my kids about this, like this is an ongoing conversation. And I'm not meaning it flippantly, but like that is part of a conversation. And is it still, and I don't mean this, so I'm air quoting, but I don't mean it in a flippant way, but like, is it okay for writers to explore that? Is it different for writers than it is for actors than it is for how do you feel about that?
I think it's very important for writers to try and explore other points of view with but I do think it's very delicate. So I mean I spoke to Tonya about this, and because I in my first novel, one of the main characters is black, and she's a black scientist, black female scientist, and I really got to know it and I really got to love it. And then Tanya was like, think about why you want to have that black person in your story. And I never really got to a point where I was, because I was writing a different character, I never really got to the point where I had to come back and really sit with that. But so I don't really have the answer to your question. I just know that I can't write a story. It doesn't feel good to write a story where everyone's just me, like a white, I
Yeah.
can't, because I have a white female experience. I don't want my story to just be dominated by white female experience. Like, so I think maybe part of it is having it is doing the research and maybe trying to speak to the people who you are trying to write. Not obviously being, oh, I need to find a black female scientist, but like at least speak to black women
Yeah.
about their experiences,
Yeah.
So like do the research and one idea I had was, and this was before I was even going to send it to a publisher, like getting a sensitivity writer, but specifically maybe a black woman to read it, but also paying them for their time,
Yeah.
because it shouldn't be a free service.
Right. Yeah.
Like that's a very important part of it. Because and that feels like a scary thing, right? Because we are both white people, and that feels like a scary thing to give a story to it, like, okay, I've written about a black woman. Will you please read this and tell me if I'm being wrong? Like, I feel this. I'm very. I'm. You know. I just don't want to get it wrong. I'm very, very worried about offending or getting it wrong. But I think that vulnerability, as long as you're honest and open and you're actively trying to make it representative and inclusive, I think that vulnerability is good. Like that's better to be vulnerable like that than to be ignorant, I think.
I couldn't agree more because like I, and again it's I, of course I'm saying that because I do it right, so of course I agree because I do it. I don't like and I like Jonathan Tropper a lot, Jonathan Tropper, excuse me, a lot. He writes about straight white dudes living straight white dude lives, and like I do, he I do enjoy his books, I have to say. They like I really like This Is Where I Leave You is spectacular. He just kind of writes about like middle-aged white dudes, which is what he was when he wrote his books. And now he's moved on and he writes other things, and he wrote The Adam Project. He does like movies and stuff now. But like, I just love all his books. But it's also like, I can't just write that because I'm not douchey white dude. And most of the characters in his books are like somewhat douchey, and you're like, oof, it's a tough read. But it's also, he's making fun of it too. Like, he's also, they're not real heroes, just so you're like, okay, that's important that he's acknowledging, like, his, without saying white privileged white dude writing a book, he's also like this guy, and you're like, that guy is a douche, like, he's making fun of his main character. And so in my the novel The Will, seven different characters speaking, and one of them is dead. So it's really six in present tense, and then one talks in past tense. But there's no straight white guys, except for one of the villains, and you don't hear from him. Like, one of the villains is the dad, one of the dads of the kids, and Honey's dad, and he's the worst. And like, I think at one point, Scotty, who's the main villain, but we hear from her point of view. And again, Ada's favorite character in that book is Scotty, and she wants to play Scotty. Like,
I
she's
love
like,
that.
let's make a movie, and I want to play Scotty. Let's put it, do a stage play so I can play Scotty. She's the worst. She's
Nice.
a mixed, she has a son, Jason, who's a mixed race, and she's racist.
Okay.
She's like really complicated and awful. And she's a terrible person. And she's got this son who looks nothing like her. Not only is he, did he, like, they're very pasty white Irish Americans from Indianapolis, Indiana. And so like, she has this relationship, this guy Dave, very tall, muscular African American, and her son comes out and looks just like him. And she is salty and pissy, and her whole thing, and the like, because she just wants Jason to be like her or whatever. So anyway, there's this line about the one straight white guy who's in it. She's like, he looks like the after picture for meth. And like, he's really bad. Really awful. He's a terrible person. He's a horrible monster. So anyway, so like, all these characters, and none of them are straight white guys. Like, the white guy who's in the family, Will, he's gay, and his husband is Hawaiian. And then there's three women, and then Jason, who's a young African American, mixed race, African American man, teenager. And so like, as I was writing it, and and I was going through that, like, I really did sit and think, like, well, who are these people? And they each have their own soundtrack, and they each have their own things that they like. And what I also tried to do was like, break what the easy thing to do. What would the easy thing to do about this? Like, if I'm straight white guy who doesn't know anything about young African American men, well, I'm just going to make them look like every other young African American man that exists in media. Or I could have him look like that. I could have him be 6'4", full of muscles, but I could also make him a sensitive historian with photographic memory. So that's what I've done.
I love that.
Right? And so like, I was like, well, what can I do? What do I do? So the two gay characters that they're married, Will and Koa, they're like, Koa's like the best. He's the best human being in the world. Like, he wants to give everybody a hug. He raises money. He's a fundraiser for a nonprofit organization, and he's in love and married to a recovering alcoholic who's a surfer. So I have the white guy be the surfer, right? And it's like, so it's like, what are the things that you can do? And like, they're not, but like, well, Scotty sees them, and she sees these two gay guys, so she says awful things to them all the time because she's a monster. But they're not those things. Like, if you just saw them together and you didn't know they were married, you wouldn't, maybe wouldn't know they were married, or maybe you would because it wouldn't matter, because they're not like, what is the most stereotypical gay thing you could do?
I mean, that's such a good way to approach it. So, because you want diverse characters in your stories, because that's so important. But you don't just want a whole host of tropes, you know, because, and that's that shows a great that's a, that shows great sensitivity, because, you know, there is the media will just put people into categories, but you, as the inventor of these characters, can really bypass that. That's yeah that's it's a really good way. What am I not seeing on TV?
That's what I
What am
was
I
hoping.
not seeing in films?
Correct. And I also wonder if that's why I'm not getting any bites. Because it's like, well, this isn't the thing. So I don't know. Or it could be it's not very good, but I love it, and I struggled to change it. Like, Lee and I did turn it into a screenplay. Like, she took the entire novel over COVID and put it into a script, like word for word, like pulled the dialogue off, physically turned it into this like 200 page film script, which is way too long for a film script. And then I've gone through and cut it down to like make it a manageable, shootable film script. So we've got a film script that we both of our names are on. We've got the book that my name is on. I do have like the perfect cast in my head for the film. Like I think about it all the time, but like all of that to say, yes, I sat and I thought about that, and I actually try then to even like acknowledge it. So there's a line when Will needs to go to a meeting because he's a bad alcoholic. He's not a good, he's really in recovery, but he falls off all the time. Like that's, he's, when he gets stressed and anxious, he immediately drinks if Ko is not there, and Ko is not there. So that's what he does. And so, and sometimes he does it when Koa is there. That's so like, and Ko is like, he loves them anyways, and they're just great. I love them as a couple. But anyway, so there's this thing where Ko is like, hey, I found a meeting. It's at this place. They're in Indianapolis. And he's like, oh, I know where that church is. He's like, okay, yeah, I'll drop you there in the morning. He's like, but there is one at this other place that is specifically for LGBTQ plus, because I know, and Ko says to Will, because he's like, I know how much you love saying all your problems are because you're queer. And he's like, yes, you know me so well. And like, that's the joke. To these two men who are in a marriage saying that to each other, because they both address it throughout the course of the book that that isn't their problem.
Yeah.
It's your problem. It's somebody else's problem. They have chosen to not make that be their problem. Like neither of them are upset. Neither of them are like wishing they weren't that. They're like, you may have a problem with me being with us. We don't have a problem with us. And so like, it's like a shorthand way to get there. So I was just curious, because like I heard you say you were talking about a minor dealing with his sexuality. So I was like, ooh, that's a perfect way in. So like, tell me about that. Like, why is that an interesting story? Because is like, in not having not been to Wales, having only read about Wales, would that be a problem?
Well, so the story that I'm thinking about is actually a woman dealing with her sexuality.
Oh, I thought you said his. Sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry. I mean, there are...
That Welsh accent. I
know,
it
is not.
No, sorry.
But that, I mean, that is such a good point, actually, because a gay Welsh minor...
That's what I heard. So maybe I just started writing
oh
that
my gosh.
Story. I was like, maybe
but
that's...
But that's such a good point. And obviously I haven't fleshed out the story, but maybe there should be a gay Welsh minor. But with the sexuality thing for the woman, I think largely because I'm still in a space where I'm like kind of figuring out mine.
Sure.
And so my story gives me an avenue to explore that.
Sure.
But I'm not afraid of writing from a male perspective or exploring that writing from a male perspective. And actually, I actually love the idea of writing a gay Welsh minor. Thank you, Tony.
I thought that's what you said anyway. So I really want you to.
Well, now it is what I'm saying.
Okay, good. I can't wait to read about it. Well, I just think too, it's like, especially if it's just an exploration of, and I think like, you know, and this isn't for anybody who's met Mary Bennett in Welcome to Mansfield, this isn't that much of a super surprise that she's asexual. I've always read Mary Bennett in Pride and Prejudice as asexual. I know some people read her as queer, some people like as gay. Actually, some people read her as that she's in love with Mr. Collins. I know that there are some reads on that because she's so religiously devout. But that's also, when you read the book, she just likes books. Right? Like that's the thing that Mary loves is books most, and everybody else, people are fine, but books are better. So I made her that, and there's an actual conversation that I write about. Like, so I did the research, I did the reading, I thought about it, and I had to wait till I got to the end because I was already in the same thing. Like when Maggie, which we know from Welcome to Mansfield, again, not a surprise, Maggie's bisexual. So when I had her coming out story in her book, I talked to Ada about it. I was like, here's her understanding, not just coming out, but like when she realizes, because she realized she likes girls before she realizes she likes boys too. And so when I talked to Ada about it, and Ada was like I just kind of always knew, so I don't have a good story. It's like, damn it. But come on, tell me your story so I can just copy it and put it in my book. No, but it was good just to have the conversation with her about it, about like what that is, you know, and bisexuality. But the reason all that comes up is because Tanya says it all the time. You know, it's like, well, everybody's a little bit bi. There's a really great song by a laptop rapper called MC Lars, who's been on the ADHD cast, by the way. You guys, I can't believe you guys were sitting in the same chair and everything. It's super weird that you know a laptop rapper from Oakland. But and you guys could just sit in the same chair. But he has a song called Everyone's a Little Bit Gay.
Oh, I love that.
It's a
Nice.
really funny song. But I do think there's this idea of like I always have like my sexual awakening story, and everybody can laugh, is that I was a young boy and I saw d wet Donna Reed in It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, you said that. Oh, I
It's
love that.
I'm
What a
serious.
way to discover
She's
that
an
you like
angel.
girls,
Whoa.
honestly.
But I've also never I mean just an angel, and she's lit that way. And Allison just said, well, obviously Frank Capra thought that, agreed with you, that's why she's lit that way. I'm like, well, it worked. It worked. Good job, sir. But all of that to say, you know, like I'm not interested in boys, but I also understand, like we talked about this last time, like I understand, like I get
You can appreciate
who's handsome. Yeah.
yeah, you
Yeah.
can appreciate
I've
who
never
like
been
who's
that
handsome.
guy. I've never been
Exactly.
that guy. 'Cause it's like, I don't, 'cause straight dudes have no problem acknowledging when a dude is ugly. I'm like, well, if you can recognize that is an ugly dude, then that also means you can recognize what a
Exactly.
handsome dude is. Like,
Exactly.
you know what I mean? And again, we go back because we talked about Idris last time too. It's like, I defy you, anybody, to be like, Idris Elba, dog. No, everybody knows. Everybody looks at Idris Elba as like,
Oh, what a king. Yeah,
what a
exactly.
king.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's, there's just, Jack and I were just talking about as we're covering Justified. We're like Timothy Oliphant's just one of those guys.
No,
We're just like,
honestly.
right? And
Yeah,
you're not, I'm not going to
exactly.
pretend, I'm not going to say like, I don't understand. I don't want to kiss him, but I'm also going to be like, that's a handsome dude.
Yeah,
Look at
but it's
him.
so good that you, that's the whole point. You speak to people who have had different experiences to you. So you
Right.
spoke to Ada, you've listened to what Tanya said,
Yeah.
because I was watching something on Netflix the other day. I think it was like Love on the Spectrum, and there was a two
What, I don't know
queer
what that
young
is. What is that?
that is Love on the Spectrum is autistic, well, people who are on the spectrum trying to find love.
Oh, nice. So it's a
Yeah,
reality show?
it's
Oh,
really sweet. It's really
okay.
sweet.
Nice.
So there's this young girl. Well, this young woman who's, dating, and she goes on a date with this queer woman, and she says, oh, what did she say? She said, yeah, like why do we have to come out? Like, why don't, we don't expect straight people to declare their
Right.
sexuality. Like, why do we
Exactly.
have to have a coming? Like, why do we have to come out? Like, I don't want to announce it to anyone. That's just how I feel. And
Right.
it's just things like that. You're like, yeah, we don't expect straight people to be like, by the way, I am straight. You
Right.
know? Like, just quietly being a straight
Just
person.
be that person,
Like,
or just quietly being a person. There's a line in Lee says it all the time. There's a in the West Wing. There's a line in the West Wing where the chief of staff guy, everybody's kind of being an asshole in that episode, and he's like, "Hey, you know, there's a way to be a person." And it is maybe the greatest line Aaron Sorkin ever wrote, and he's written a lot of great lines. It was like, "You're right, there is a way to be a person," and so that's just it. Like, why do you gotta care? That was always my thing. Like, I never understood the whole racist, sexist, homophobia, and I think this was part of like why I got into the heads of these other characters, why I needed to find my characters in books, is because I just didn't care. And that's the thing to say. And so I actually, the saying, I don't care, those three words can mean something if said the wrong way. And I explore that in my second book a lot. But somebody says, I don't care in a way, like you heard me be like, I don't care. But if you say it to the wrong person at the wrong time, it could be like, I don't care. I'm not interested in that. As opposed to like, it's none of my business, it doesn't matter. Like, if you want to talk to me about it, let's talk about it. So that's how I feel. You're exploring, Jess B. Davies, exploring your sexuality. Good for you. It doesn't affect me.
Just
If you
doing it
decided
quietly off
tomorrow
to the
you
side.
also liked girls and you were bi, that would, you know what? It wouldn't matter.
Yeah,
If you wanted to
exactly.
talk about it, I would be here to listen. But it's like, it doesn't change who you are
No,
to
exactly.
me.
And it also doesn't mean that, like, I think writing to me is
Yeah.
as much a part of my identity as I can imagine for some people being queer is to them.
Correct.
Like, it's just whatever takes up the pie chart. What takes up like big chunks of your pie chart?
Exactly.
Like, teeny
Exactly. Right.
tiny sliver for me and a lot of other people are
Yeah.
questions around
Yeah.
sexuality. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But for
Exactly.
other
And that,
people, it might be a massive chunk.
but see, like you said, you're trying to connect to people. So I try to write these things. That's why I wanted to have this conversation with you about creating these characters and like the characters who are different than you. And of course, you are in all of them. Like, when I was on Kyle's show, we were talking about Mansfield. He said, "Who are you most like in Welcome to Mansfield?" And I said, "Julia."
Yes.
Because she is full of big dreams. Have you met her? You've met her.
I have met her now. Yeah.
Yeah,
I have
yeah.
met her
She's
now.
So full of big dreams. And she's got a big speech.
Oh, also, I loved
Yeah.
it when she acknowledged her privilege.
That's it, right? And then later she has another big speech. She does acknowledge her privilege. She's like, "I know I'm not supposed to like being rich, but I love
but
it."
I love it. I'm like, yes, Julia.
Yeah, yeah. But
If
it's
I
not.
was rich, I'd be like, look.
I
I know
know.
this is problematic, but I just love it so much. Me and
Right.
Rhea have that conversation all the time. I'm like, fuck, I just wish, I wish I was rich. I wish I didn't have to work for a living. I wish I
Exactly.
could just sit around like rearranging my bookshelves and creating art. Like that's
Exactly. And that's it. And so that privilege gives her, she has another speech later.
love that.
Yeah. And I love that about her, that she has this big dream that she wants to live and she's bursting to get out of herself. And so, like, I feel the most like her. Like, I want to be Yeats. He's so cool. But I'm not. Like, I'm not that cool. I can't be that in control all the time. Like, he's awesome. Like, he's so great and he's everybody's care bear. You know, like, I'm not. I'm anxious and have stress. And, you know, so it's just funny to think about. Like, so the character I am most like, you know, aren't the people who look like me, but I'm there. I'm all over the books. Like, you know, there's all these things that are there. So I wanted to say to you as we come to the end and you'll plug all your things. You talked about the rewrite and stuff. So this is, I just wanted to say this under recording. So the will, which I've talked about, which again isn't published, but is done, and I am proud of. I was at a point, I had a plan, right? I was like, it's going to be like this. So the first part was going to be just the three siblings written in first person. And then this middle part was going to be the husband, Koa, and the two kids written in first person. And then the third part was going to be all six of them. I got to the beginning of part two and I was like, fuck, this won't work. I went back to page one and started over. I kept, like, I can see where things were there. But it was like, Honey and Jason and Koa are the other characters. Honey is one of the kids, Jason's one of the kids, and Koa is the husband. And it was like, oh, I can't get there. I can't. So I went back and I started over and I had to like read chapter one, how, which is Scotty, can I keep it? Then what's chapter two? Can I keep it? Chapter three, can I keep it? No, I can keep it, but now it's chapter five. So I'm going to write a new chapter three. So I realized that all six characters have to speak in first person in the first six chapters, right? You have to introduce them. Then I could tell it out of order. So, like, I did, then I had to go. And so then I had to change and I had to move. So by the time I got caught up to where I was, I added like 75 pages.
Okay.
To get right where I fucking was a year before.
Yeah.
So
Oh
I'm
my God,
just saying
yeah.
out loud to you, it's okay. But then I was almost done.
Yes, see, but you wanted to do it. You wanted to, like, that's the
Yeah,
thing, like, you wanted,
I needed to
you
finish.
needed to
And I know
go,
you
yeah.
don't, but I'm just saying, like, it's okay, especially if you're saying you're pulling these characters out.
Yeah.
So that's okay. So this was the background. Other people, like one of my professors, Chris Rosales, he's got like a whole crazy murder board in his wall where he had literally had cork board put up on his wall in his office because he
Nice.
sticks pins and he has cards and it looks like a crazy person in there.
Amazing.
And he writes magical realism, and he's the one who says to me, who writes non-magical realism. He's just like, I can just like magic fish my way out of it. You got to get yourself out of every corner. And he has, and that's what he said. But he's got this whole cork board of shit because he doesn't really want to magic fish his way out of it. Although he could if he wanted to. So I say to you, like, don't feel bad. And I'm glad you've come around. You've come. You're still in crisis, but I see your crisis ending. I see you have a solution. I just want you to know, sometimes you got to start over. Sometimes you got to leave it in the drawer. I have like four or five unfinished manuscripts, a couple of really good ideas that I wanted to start. One really good line to the beginning of something that is just sitting there. But the other characters for the rest of the Austin Chronicles are whispering in my ear and telling me stuff. And I was like, people, I have got other stuff to do, but they're whispering and they're talking. So I know that's what I'm going to do next because I'm in full conversation with Jane Fairfax right now. She is bursting because she doesn't speak in the first book at all. And the fourth book is about her.
Oh, I love that you.
She's got stuff to say. But we talk and she's got a soundtrack. It's working together. But I also already know the soundtrack for the sixth book. And I already know the opening of the fifth book because I can't help myself. These characters are there.
Yeah.
So, but those will change. Like I said, right now, I'm going through the revision of draft, whatever. So I just don't want you to feel those 2 years was your MFA. That was you at the school of Jess's writing. So don't be sad. And I know that's easy to say as somebody who goes to therapy and hears other people say like, oh no, you're good. And I was like, ugh. It's always that joke when you're like, oh man, nobody likes me. And then the person says, oh no, man, I like you. And you're like, nobody good likes me. Like, that's how I feel when I say things to people that if they were to say the same thing back to me, I'm like, you're an idiot. You can't say that to me. I suck. So, but like, because that's just how we are as creatives.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the things I say to other people is go to therapy.
I'm in therapy.
I'm not in therapy.
Oh, you should go.
So like, if people say that to me, I'm like, yeah, yeah, I know.
I highly recommend. Five stars.
Easier said than done.
Yeah,
you know?
Five stars. Like, it took a year to get one. I mean, it was hard. It's a hard, arduous process, especially with our insurance in America and all that other bullshit. But so I just wanted to tell you that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I redid the whole thing. The story changed a lot from when it first started. Just so you know, Will and Koa were just roommates when it started.
Oh, yeah. You see things. Yes, I appreciate that so much. And I feel so grateful that I have people around me who will, like, because I had a chat with a Fairmont group as well, and they were like, Alison was like, look, I have got so many screenplays that never went anywhere. She's like 15, whatever. Like, she's like, just, and you know, Tanya as well, they were all just like, and as you know, I had my freak out to Rhea as well. But I feel like I've got so many people in my corner who, you know, you have the experience that I don't have. And it's so comforting to hear that, like, and I can't believe I never thought I would have a writing. I didn't even think about it. Of course I'm going to have a writing crisis. I'm
Everybody
probably going to have
does.
Multiple more. Like,
you will have more.
Exactly.
You will absolutely have more. And the thing is, and that's the other thing. It's like, unlike Stephen King, and again, I keep using him as a reference, and you're like, I haven't read those, quit using him as a reference. But fill in the blank author that you know who's very prolific, who has a dog, because they had to. They had a contract. They had to get a book out. They had a deadline, and they put some shit out, right? And that is too bad. Like, I don't love everything Stephen King has written. There's some that I think are objectively bad. Mm-hmm. I think there's a couple of Taylor Jenkins Reid's books that aren't good. But boy, God. Do I love those four? The four mm-hmm. in particular, the connected four, the Daisy Jones and Malibu Rising and Evelyn Hugo. I love those books. Like, I want to get in there and hang out with them and like punch that guy and hang out with her. And she's great. He's a douche. Like, I love those books. Love them. But then there's a couple of you're like, same thing with Leanne Moriarty. I love like Three Wishes, one of her first books is great. And then there's a couple that were like sucky. I actually didn't like Little Big Lies. And then it's like, I didn't read any of her for a while. And then I'm really big into her new kind of more, you know, mystery stuff that she's writing. Cool. I love her sister, Jacqueline Moriarty. Great. Sometimes. So the problem is they're all doing it in public.
Yeah.
Right. They're writing and like, there's a bad movie. Like, this person's made a bad movie. This person's made a bad album. This person's made a bad, because that's the art. They're putting it out there. And not all of, that's the other thing. You have to be like, oh, right. You too put out that song Lemon. They put out the Zooropa album. Then people love the Zooropa. Like, are you sure? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to say that. And I'm not here to shit on you. You know what I mean? Like, they're YouTube. Who am I? Well, like, you have to think about that. Like, everybody you love has done something. Like, Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy made that god-awful Thunder Force movie.
Oh, yeah.
They're
both. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and they did that on purpose.
Yeah.
That was awful. They're both a million billion times better than that, right?
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Like, every time, like, Octavia Spencer, Chuck Queen, love her, everything she's in, she makes whatever she's in 20 times better, right? Melissa McCarthy, charming, hysterical, love her. That movie, that should have been comedy gold. It was so awful. It was objectively terrible, right? So you have to think about that. Like, you, and that's what Allison's saying. Like, I've got 15 that are just going nowhere. And that sucks for her because, like, I get mad. I had a freak out because I watched a terrible movie and got so mad that it got made and the budget was like $60 million. And I thought about the movies of Allison's that didn't get made. And I was like, wait a minute. This thing sucks. I've not even read all of her stuff, but I can guarantee it's better than this. $60 million on like you just lit $60 million on fire. So I try to be objective about that and be like, okay, well, like you said, it's the zeitgeist. The what is the trope? What is the thing? What is it people want to see? Well, if you don't have that, if you're not here to just write the cool new thing, you're not going to be the cool new thing. Like, because the cool new thing is all contrived. You writing your Substack is what you want to write. And if that picks up and takes off, excellent. But you're going to stay true to it because you're you.
Exactly.
That's my pep talk at the end. How'd I do?
Perfect.
Excellent. So
Perfect.
say all the things out loud. Besides the Femme Collective, the excellent group of feminists that I'm proud to say are my friends.
Oh, they are wonderful. They are absolutely wonderful. But yeah, so the new thing will be called Bang Average.
I
But
love that.
I guess the URL currently is bang average blog at substack.substack or whatever, but obviously that's not very easy to slot into anything. So we will put that in the show notes.
Yes,
But
you'll send them
on
to me.
Substack it will be called Bang Average because it's about all the bang average one wonderful things that humans do.
I can't wait. And you're I and then you're at Jess B. Davies.
I am at Jesby, I think, underscore day.
Underscore Davies.
Jespy underscore Davies. I probably need to get rid of that soon. And then yeah, at Femon Collective, my little podcast is Literature for Life, and Tony has been on there a few times and will be
It's
again.
been my honor. Yes, and we're going to do, I've already told you my recommendation for the next time.
Yes, I need to
You need to give me one
get
and then
mine
I can
sorted.
read it. I'm excited. Yes, we're going to do that because that was fun. I like that. I
That
like
was
having,
wonderful.
and I even put it on my, because I do book bingo. And so every once in a while I do like a book recommended to me. You've recommended that in the Thursday Murder Club. You gave me that.
Yes.
That was delightful. Well, you didn't say that. You just said him. And so I picked that one.
But that's the one that I read.
Yeah. So I didn't know, but it felt like the right thing. So anyway, so you can go to arfarina.com and that's where you can get stuff. And there's links to things and there's an audiobook out now. And the most important thing that you can do, listener, is you can go to your local library website or column or whatever and request Welcome to Mansfield print book and audiobook. That is the most important thing to me. If you don't want to buy a copy, that's fine. If you could request it at your library, it doesn't cost you anything. It gets that book in front of all the other poor kids like me who learned at the library. So that's the thing. If every library in America has a copy of my book, I will be the happiest person ever. I don't have to, those are the only ones I need to sell. I mean, I like to sell them at bookstores. I'd like to sign them, but libraries, please and
And
thank
that's the
you.
same in the UK, sure.
Sure.
Surely.
Yeah, go to your local, and I'm in a library in the UK. Because I've gone to
Cool.
worldcat.org and typed myself in, and I know I'm in a UK library.
Well, that is what I'm going to say the next time I'm sharing any of your stuff on Instagram.
Yes, please, please, please go to your
That
local
is the
library.
thing.
Yes, add it to your library. So I'm in a few. So there's a few library apps already that have Welcome to Mansfield audio. So you can hear my words read by Ada McCartney.
Yes, and that is what I'm listening to. Got it on Google Play, on the Google Play app.
Yeah. It
And
was pretty
it
cheap on
was,
there too.
it is like, I think it was
Cheaper than
eight
the print book, which is
cheaper than the
crazy,
print book, cheaper than the print book, which
which
is
is
why it's taken me
insane.
this long, but also cheaper than an order or cheaper than if you bought it on Audible. It was like £8, which for an audiobook is really good.
It is.
So, and Ada McCartney is just an excellent narrator.
And I love the way she starts. You are
Yeah.
listening. Like, wow, she's coming in hot.
Oh,
Yeah,
bless
it's
it. And she doesn't
very.
talk too fast either. She's
She
brilliant.
is very good. It's like she went to college on an acting
I
scholarship or
know.
something.
Gosh.
Weird. She's gonna need your guys' help though, because the second book takes place in England. So she will probably need
Okay. Well,
some
my accent won't be
coaching.
any good, but she can speak to Luke because he was born in Cambridge. He's got one of them posh boy accents.
Well, they're from It takes place in Exeter, and they're not from Exeter. So the most of the voices there are going to be Southern voices. So that posh is in the South.
Yeah, there we
Okay,
go.
so that'll be good. Cool. All right.
Yes.
Well, it'll be up to her. I mean, she already has met. You've heard Maggie, right? Have you met Maggie yet?
No, I don't
She's
think so.
in there. She's in this book. So she'll just
Perfect.
do her voice for the next books too. Same character, obviously. All right. Jess B. Davies, colon, writer. This has been the ADHD cast where we talked about writing. We had no agenda. I had three words written down and we talked for an hour and a half. Perfect.
Thank you so much for having me on. I both needed this and really, really enjoyed it.
Same. That is the same thing too. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. I don't have a good ADHD cast theme song yet, so I'll put something out. You'll hear something. Maybe it'll just change by whatever the topic is. Something
Wonderful.
about words. Yeah. All right. We'll see everybody sometime. Happy spring. Bye.
Adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter. The frenzied pace of the mind inside the cell. The man on the street might just as well be. The man on the street might just as well. The man on the street might just as well be. Tight jaw, say it all, say it all. But the white paint, plastic saints, say it all, 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 say somebody got to say it all. Got to see it all. I'm so nervous, I'm so tense. My heart can't forget about this self-defense. When the air is so hot and my breath comes fast, I thumb the cool blade, but I know this can't last.
So nervous, so tense.
I thumb the cool blade, but I know this can't last. But the white paint, plastic saints, say it all, 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 say somebody got to say it all. Somebody got to say it all. Adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter. The frenzied pace of the mind inside the cell. The man on the street might just as well be. The man on the street might just as well be.